Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me this week, the contradiction to my exposition and the fugitive variant to my random variable, it's Dan. Hey, Dan, welcome back.
Hey, good evening. Thanks for having me.
I love when you do that. Oh, man. So, as folks already know before they clicked on this podcast, we are setting forth on the first of what should be, I assume, will be 6 weekly podcasts to cover the latest entry in the massive MCU Wall of Wonders, Loki. Some of y'all out there, you may recall that the two of us, we crashed the WandaVision party a little more than midway through that season. And while, at least in my opinion, I don't want to speak for Dan, I didn't feel Falcon and the Wooden Soldier really cut the podcast-worthy mustard for us. I think we both knew from the start we were absolutely going to be covering Loki. I mean, and which means from the start.
Yeah, it kind of seemed like the logical thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying for a while I was really very excited about this. I think between the two of us and anyone who's actually listened to us over the years, especially when we covered the more geeky material, you know, like the CWDC shows or Legion, you know, you're a little bit more Marvel and I'm a little bit more DC. But speaking for myself, if you were to go back in time 30, 40 odd years, and hopefully the TVA isn't pursuing you, you'll find that Loki was actually among my all-time favorite Marvel villains. I always had a thing for Loki, so to speak.
Yeah, he's always been a good character, and in the, like, at least in like the two really, really, really bad Thor movies, he was like literally the only good thing in them. So, I mean, he definitely, like, you know, this was a kind of show worth watching just based on that, because, you know, he's damn good.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, speaking of with the movies, I mean, to be honest, if you're going to be honest with the MCU, they did have a stretch there where they really had what we call the not so great villains in many of their features. I don't think they really start to turn that around until somewhere around phase 3 of the MCU. But you're right, Loki, especially the way Tom Hiddleston, brought the character to life, really was always a standout. And yeah, I mean, he's what makes those first two Thor movies worth watching. Because you take that character performance out of the mix, or have someone else in that role maybe, or it's written a little different. I could not recommend either one of them. I just, going back to just thinking of him as when I was a kid, and you'll like this part. I mean, when I would think of Marvel and my favorites, what I call the iconic bad guys, I always led off with, you know, the Fantastic Four's duo of like Doctor Doom and Galactus were always my favorite. But honestly, before I even got to any Spidey rogues or even the Red Skull, Loki, I think Loki was always like in my top three. And I think any child who grew up, you know, fiddling with crayons or pencils or whatever, and if you're drawing superheroes, hey, I remember an 8-year-old Scott, you know, drawing Thor and Loki fighting all the time because I love drawing those helmets, you know? The reason why I'm just saying this is this is a rare occurrence of a series that I'm eagerly looking forward to, both based on the actor and the character as we've seen him in movies recently, and it actually is tapping into a little bit of a nostalgic sentimentality for me personally that goes back to when I was just when my biggest problem in life was I have to wash my hands before going to sleep or something. Which, you know, I kind of have to do that now with COVID anyway, so there you go. I mentioned Hiddleston. Have you seen him in anything else beyond playing Loki? I don't remember if we ever talked about him in any of his other projects.
No, I never got around watching anything else he was in.
Okay.
I don't watch a lot of current stuff, and I mean, the one TV show sounded like it'd be okay. I just never got around to it.
Oh, I think I know which one you're talking about. That miniseries he was in, I think they ran on AMC, The Night Manager.
That's all, yeah. I mean, yeah. That must be it, because it comes to my mind when I think about it.
Yeah, I mean, he's in that one with heavyweights like Hugh Laurie and Olivia Colman. It's like they're like the big three in that. It's very good. I've seen him in a few other things, but he's kind of one of those actors. This is how I know I like him. I like him even when I know I hate the movie. And the example, like, I mean, oh, he's actually in that King Kong movie, the Skull Island one, which I don't hate. It's not bad. It's like guilty pleasure fun. There's a lot of good actors in it. And it's like how they, I guess they, you know, they paid off all these people to do this movie, but it's actually not bad. The one I was thinking of as far as a movie I hate, it's actually a Steven Spielberg movie of all things. And, you know, I'm a Spielberg guy, but I hate the movie War Horse so much. And he's like basically the main, acting lead other than the horse in that movie. And he's great. I just hate the movie. And I have my reasons. I won't get into them here. I did see the stage production of War Horse at Lincoln Center here in New York, and it was phenomenal. But long story short, it should not have been made into a movie. That's it. That's all. But it does occur to me now, because I'm thinking about all our podcasts of the past. That's actually a movie, maybe in a future podcast. I should make that one I rant about instead of my usual cliched, you know, I hate Prometheus and Interstellar. Right? You know, it's a new season for the STVD podcast. I need to update my material finally. All right. So people are like, okay, are you going to start talking about Loki yet? Okay, we'll start talking about it now. The series. Interesting things to note before we start talking about the actual episode. The series creator is Michael Waldron. What's interesting about him is that essentially his previous work, you know, producing, working with the writing staff, etc., was on Rick and Morty and Community. So that tells you off the top of the bat, you know, right off the bat, here's a guy who should be able to handle humor and really any serious mind-bending wackiness, which is what we're going to be getting in this series. And what's even more important to note, he's also the writer, or should I say the screenwriter, of the upcoming Doctor Strange sequel, the one Into the Multiverse of Madness. So if you didn't already know that this series looked like it was going to be a big stepping stone for that film, just like WandaVision was, that pretty much guarantees it, I think.
Yeah.
And finally, because, you know, mentioned the writer, should mention the director. All six episodes apparently are directed by the same person, a woman, Kate Herron. She doesn't have a very long list of credits to her name. She's done a handful of episodes of something called Sex Education, a show I've heard about, but I've never seen. I know Gillian Anderson's in it. That's the one thing I remember. And beyond that, just a number of shorts. So let's get into the episode, which turns out to be titled, because I know, you know, Disney Plus has to do that thing where they make, you know, if you're an idiot like me waiting till 3 a.m. on the East Coast for the episode to show up, you know, you're not going to know the title until like 4 or 5 a.m. The title of the episode turned out to be Glorious Purpose. Now, I would say, you can see if you're on the same page with me on this one. I mean, I really enjoyed Endgame. I'm sure you did as well, as did most of the world, apparently. I always thought that one of the most intriguing mysteries left after that movie had nothing to do with the snap or the blip or whatever we're calling it, but it was, what happened to Loki? So that, I love that that's the starting point for this series. Because, I mean, for me personally, that was always one of the big things about Endgame that made me go, ooh, what are they going to do there? Because that was when we saw that, we weren't thinking of there being ever being a TV series. We just said, oh, is he going to show up in the next Thor movie or something? Yet again, how many times is this guy going to die and come back to life at this point, you know? So when the series starts off, you know, we saw that, you know, back when a couple Avengers traveled to 2012 to I guess they were there to snatch the Tesseract, because they had that, you know, that chewy infinite stone center. There was this whole Rube Goldbergian series of oopsies that happens that resulted in a gag Loki being able to grab the Cosmic Cube, and then he poofs right out of there. And that's exactly where the series picks up. And we see that he was bamfed across the globe to the Gobi Desert. And moments later, you know, you see a small squad of what, looks like cops in full-out riot gear. They capture him without even working up much of a sweat. And then they eventually are taking him to the headquarters of what we learn is the Time Variance Authority. Now, Dan, because I know what comics it appears in. You are absolutely familiar with the TVA from the comic books. I mean, did you recognize it instantly? Did you remember, or did you have to, like, you know, think about it? Or
I mean, just, you know, I mean, it's, they've never been like super prominent in the stuff that I've read, but, you know, it's still, I mean, you know, recognize, you know, what's going on with them.
Right. It's an organization in the comics. It's been around since roughly like the mid 80s or so. What's really kind of nice about it is the way they kind of portray it here in the series, although it does have a certain familiarity about it. But that's not the fault of the series. I mean, some of these things were done, you know, back in the 80s. I think you might agree that once again, there's a slight Brazil kind of vibe to it, which is absolutely something I think it shares with the organization that's on the Umbrella Academy, which I understand you started to watch, right? Or finished watching?
Yeah. I watched all that so right. far, yeah.
So they also have their own, like, commission there, who kind of sort of do the same kind of thing, except the TVA, I feel, is more on an intergalactic level. And as far as we know, the commission on Umbrella Academy is just Earthbound. Although, if they're only Earthbound, why would they be trying to preserve an apocalypse? But whatever.
and then, yeah, based on how that series ended so far, I mean, maybe they aren't just going to be Earthbound. So
that is true. That is true. But this whole, you know, whatever you want to call it, this like Time Cop Bureau kind of concept, it's been kicking around for several decades in everything from, you know, films, TV shows, and of course books and comic books. I mean, you can go
all Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Deep Space Nine. One of the best. Another one with it's got one of those names just like it. I think it's the Temporal Integrity Commission. Is what they're called in Deep Space Nine, and that was the first time I ever watched a Deep Space Nine episode many years ago, because I heard there was like, oh, they're doing a crossover with the Trouble with Tribbles episode. I've got to see this, and then I realized how weird it was to watch a Star Trek episode when I don't know who any of these new characters are. But it goes all the way back to the 50s and an Isaac Asimov novel that had an organization like that. You know, we're seeing it. It's been playing on the DC's Legends of Tomorrow for the last few years, although let's face it, it's not as cool as any of these other things. And speaking of DC, they've had something like that in their comics for decades now, with an organization known as the Linear Men. So, like I'm saying, it's something I think everybody has to have one of these, apparently. Yeah. The thing I find is kind of fun with what Marvel did, and you're right, it was something that, although it did factor in a number of comics, then I think it first appeared in Thor, then it was in the Fantastic Four, there was always a certain winking, tongue-in-cheek nature to it. Like, you know, the Agent Mobius, and apparently his actual name is Mobius M. Mobius, which... And I'm wondering if the M stands for Mobius. I'm assuming it does. When you dig into the comic book history of it, that he was one of a series of clones that worked for the TVA. And what makes it really kind of funny is that they were all drawn to look like one of the Marvel writers at the time, Mark Gruenwald. And the reason why, he was one of the writers who company-wide was tasked with monitoring continuity between all the titles. So, of course, they made the character look like the guy who has to do that for the timelines. And one last thing about the comics, which I hope becomes a factor on the series, for a minute that I thought it was going to when I was watching this episode, it's the weapon that they would use when someone was found guilty. On the series, they kept referring to resetting a person, but in the comics, the actual device that they used was the retroactive cannon that would erase people from existence. So you know, they're retconning people, which is what they do in comics all the time. So it's like a super meta style kind of joke. I just love that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's pretty thorough. I like it.
I hope they get that in there. So back to the episode, which really consists of, at this point, of Loki being led through, you know, the kind of bewildering bureaucracy of the TVA. Like I said, very Brazil. And then we get to one of the first of mostly enjoyable expositional info dumps that we get. We get it in the video for the TVA that plays in that little chamber before you enter the courtroom. We've seen this style of video gag before. You know, when you do the animated thing that has a very retro feel to it. You know, we've seen this. You and I have both seen it on, we've seen it on TV shows. We've talked about it on this podcast, you know, no less. And I guess a lot of people remember something like that for Jurassic Park is one that comes to mind. They always have that kind of early 60s kind of feel to them. And they're always hosted by some odd little cartoon character. You know, here it's Miss Minutes, who I just want to give a shout out. She's voiced by the practically iconic voice artist Tara Strong. I mean, this woman is only a few years younger than me, and she's been doing cartoon voices since she was 13. So basically, pretty much every other animated series or production you've seen since the mid-80s, there's a good chance Tara Strong has been a voice at some point on it. You know, whether it be superheroes or Care Bears or whatever the heck you watch, she's a factor in there somewhere. So in that video, that's where we get the rather fantastical origins of the TVA. In a nutshell, you know, once upon a time, there had been an intergalactic war between what I guess were an infinite number of timelines. And all these timelines are what basically comprised the multiverse. These cosmic beings, the timekeepers, they straightened out and fused all the timelines into one, which they called the sacred timeline. And then they created the TVA to preserve that timeline. And this organization, you know, is there to hunt down any what they call variants who threaten to disrupt the timeline, you know, by causing another one to branch out, because they feel that would inevitably lead to another war across the multiverse. I love that they keep hitting multiverse right off the bat here, because, you know, we all know what's coming in the MCU over the next few years. So that's what was kind of exciting me, just watching the video. I was like, oh yeah, they mentioned Nexus event. We talked about that with WandaVision. Oh yeah, I was getting really, I got absurdly excited about all that, because I was already kind of jumping beyond the series, anticipating the next couple Marvel movies and where they were going with it.
Yeah, they're doing a good job planting their breadcrumbs in like a, you know, a way that's like, you know, is hard to miss, but it's also not like super obvious too. So
yes. Absolutely. In fact, they are to be commended for that, because with WandaVision, when we talked about it, they, you know, obviously they did the thing with the commercial, which was kind of like, you're either going to get it or you're not. And then when you got to the very end of that series, you realize, okay, I see where this is going with the book and everything else, but there's still a lot more steps to get there. And then popping in the little info in this video, like, oh, okay. I'm connecting dots. What's interesting is COVID kind of screwed up the Disney Plus / Marvel plan here, because originally Falcon and the Boring Soldier were going to be the first series. Then it was going to be WandaVision and then Loki. And then, but they had to reverse the order because of, you know, COVID situations, and one had to stop production at a certain point, whatever. Because when you start looking at it, it makes more sense to go in that order, because it feels like these are building blocks. But on the other hand, it kind of works nicely, because maybe we got a little bit of a respite from, like, you know, the really good Marvel stuff with the crappy one. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no.
I just keep dumping on that show.
it wasn't the greatest show. I mean, there was a few things that were good about it, but it was pretty, you know, underwhelming. Like, there would never be a reason to rewatch that show ever, or to even reconsider rewatching any of the episodes, because it just didn't stand out. It was just, okay, whatever, you know, these actors are doing some stuff. And I mean, they made Winter Soldier a little bit less boring than he was in the movies, you know, a little bit, not tons, but you know, at least something. I still didn't really care that much about the character, but it just, you know, when push comes to shove, it won't be remembered as, you know, anything except, like, you know, just another one of these shows that Disney managed to get out, like, when people couldn't go to movies, which was, you know, I mean, good timing for Disney, I guess. I mean, they already were planning on, doing this stuff, you know. This is when they were planning on doing this stuff, so they already had things going, so they were able to just kind of roll it out and keep everybody's interest peaked in between, I guess, you know, when the next batch of movies start coming out, so...
Oh, it's amazing how it, in its own way, like you said, it totally worked to their advantage. It worked out fine. And about the series, I don't even know if I'd say he was more interesting in the TV series or not, because I thought he was awful in the series. And the whole, it's like, you spend the whole series with this whole thing, and you're making amends, and you're building up to admitting that you killed this man's son, and then you cut away from the scene where you tell him. What? 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 The stupid piece of crap series. It's you know what it is? It's not that it's bad. I mean, we've both watched bad series. But it's more like what you said, I don't ever need to watch it again. It's kind of forgettable. It just is. It's basically like a mid-season of a Netflix Marvel show. So it's not, you know, it's not as good as, like, you know, Jessica Jones season one, but yeah, maybe it's season two, which I kind of want to forget about with Jessica Jones or something like that. Anyway. I'll stop dumping on it. It's people, you know, like you said, there's a few things I liked. I liked the portrayal of Zemo again, even though it was kind of pointless. And I liked the I thought the Isaiah Bradley stuff was really well done. And I like seeing the two times when, Julia Louis-Dreyfus shows up as Madame Hydra, and that's it. That's really all I liked. Okay, I knew there was no way I was going to be able to do this podcast without taking a shot at it. So now it's done. So what was I saying? Oh yeah, well, we were talking about the Nexus, and you know, it's mentioned here, and it's mentioned in WandaVision, and those of us who do, you know, either know our Marvel or know how to use the internet to find out about Marvel. You know, we know that's going to be a big thing. We believe it's going to be a big thing in the Doctor Strange movie, which is, you know, again, the multiverse of madness, because the Nexus is where these universes, I guess, they meet, converge, and everything can go kablooey, whatever. Although, at this point, I'm kind of wondering how big a thing... It feels like the Spider-Man movie, which is coming out before that, is really going to be the touchstone event as far as multiverse stuff, considering what we're hearing is going to happen in that movie. So
yeah, I mean, maybe like Spider-Man will like fuck something up or something, and then they, like, you know, Doctor Strange will like explore, like, you know, the early consequences of like whatever happens there. Maybe.
Yeah, I think you're right. 'Cause I think it's, I don't know if has it been, I feel like it's been confirmed that Cumberbatch flat, you know, Strange is going to actually show up in the Spider-Man movie, which makes perfect sense. As well as, you know, other Spider-Man. I swear, if they are going to be going to have multiple Spider-Man in that movie, I will guarantee right now they'll have to have a moment where they have the two Spider-Men pointing at each other, so they just are riff on the on the classic meme, not meme, gif that everybody knows. They have to. There's no way they won't. I mean, they'll just take it, you know, and that will become the new gift from that point on. Yeah. You get all three of them on there, because we don't know if that's going to happen or not. But anyway. All right. I digress again. Oh, these glasses are hurting my nose. So back to the episode. Loki, he's brought before the court, and he's about to be, but we're talking about reset, or as I was hoping, retconned. But he gets a reprieve thanks to the intervention of Agent Mobius. Now, we had already seen Agent Mobius investigating the murder of some TVA agents back in 1549 France. But it's not really until we get the back and forth between Mobius and Loki that I think we can appreciate the casting of someone like Owen Wilson. Because I personally, speaking of going back and forth, I actually always go back and forth on my opinion of Owen Wilson. I mean, I suppose like many actors, it totally depends on the project that he's in. I mean, he's a Wes Anderson regular, and I think he's just splendid in all the Wes Anderson appearances he's done, you know, from Bottle Rocket on. I mean, he's always kind of fun.
I know. For each of these six episodes, I'm probably going to refer to him as a different Wes Anderson, Owen Wilson character, so I'll just call him Dignan for the rest of this episode.
Okay. I'm going to hold you to that now.
Oh, I will. Yeah. But you know, I tend to like him, but I tend to watch him in, like, you know, the Wes Anderson stuff more than, like, the, you know, whatever generic, like, you know, movie comes out that's got, like, you know, John Travolta and, like, Tim Allen in it or something, and they'll just throw Owen Wilson for, you know, just some, like,
oh, because there's nothing I like better than a John Travolta and Tim Allen movie. Oh, they're my favorites. I think in films like that, of that nature, I always say, you know, a little Owen Wilson can go a way too long sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, but he's in that Woody Allen movie, Midnight in Paris. He's fine in that, you know. Although I start to get a little weary of him at that point. Is he the one who's in the Rush Hour movies with Jackie Chan? Is that Owen Wilson? Okay, so he made his money. And that Wedding Crasher thing, which is not bad. It's just, it's just an hour longer than it needs to be. It's like a 3-hour long comedy. What the fuck? But here in Loki, I gotta say, I think they just lucked out just based on this one episode, but that's all you need. They came up with, I would say, an unexpected chemistry between these two actors because they have very different styles and which works because you have two very different characters as well. But I just love the way Mobius constantly undercuts, and I would even use a word like defangs, all of Loki's pomposity and arrogance throughout it. I love it because Loki is just, obviously, he's not used to anyone talking to him this way.
he's Mobius, not Morbius. You can't use defangs as a verb there. So.
I just love it, you know, especially when he calls him, like, you know, you're, I get it, you're a big metaphor guy. and before I move on, because she does appear in some of these scenes I just went through, I would be remiss if I did not mention how really nice it was to see the actress, and I hope I pronounce it correctly. I believe it's Wunmi Mosaku. If I mispronounce it, I apologize. As we all know, I butcher people's names all the time. She plays the character, she's one of the hunters, or Hunter B-15. Basically the main TVA agent that we keep seeing throughout the episode, who'd like nothing better than to reset Loki. Some of our listeners, I think, will remember her. She was on, we just saw her last year on Lovecraft Country. She played Ruby on that series, and she was really one of the standouts of that series. So I was really psyched to see her again, especially in such a very unexpected and unconventional role. So I got a kick out of that.
Sweet.
Pretty much from this point on in the episode, it's really basically Mobius trying to explain the lay of the land to Loki, you know, not just with words, but by showing him what amounts to the file of his life, you know, which is the life of Loki without the sacred timeline having been disrupted. Beyond giving the producers a good reason to recycle footage from a few Avengers and Thor movies, I kind of liked using that footage because it also helps to remind us about how surprisingly multifaceted the character of Loki has always been, and ergo, why basing a series around him turns out to be a little bit of a masterstroke, which is surprising considering you just based a series off of two of the most boring characters in the MCU in your previous series, and now you get it right with Loki. That's right, I just took another shot at Falcon and the Blast Soldier. I can't help myself. I don't even put that in the notes. I just every time I see a paragraph indent, that's code for me to make fun of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. But I was really enjoying that. But come on, the silliest thing, and maybe most memorable thing, and the one new thing that they put in there was the revelation that Loki was D.B. Cooper. And I thought of you when I was watching that, and yet people were like, why? Because I was like, Dan, isn't it still more believable than the ridiculous theory that we heard 7 or 8, maybe it was 8 years ago now, that Don Draper will turn out to be D.B. Cooper? Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was pretty lame. That was like the like Reed Richards showing up on WandaVision of its time. So.
I would say it's even worse than that, but yeah, maybe yeah. Maybe you're right now that I think about it. Why would they waste that on? Anyway, but and what's additionally great about it, and I got to give them credit for this, they show us this, and it turns out it was just a prank. And which also is perfect because he's the god of mischief. So of course, you know, but what's really kind of almost not meta, but just hysterical about that. Any of us who actually had watched the trailers for Loki over the last several months leading up to this series, we saw bits and pieces of that sequence. So I think all of us assumed, oh, I get how this series is going to be. He's going to be bouncing around in time in different guises. And look, one of his adventures is going to be this. And maybe, I don't know if we knew that he was D.B. Cooper by those trailers. But we knew it was something. And then it turns out, no, it's literally just a throwaway gag in the first episode. And unless something changes that we don't know about in the next 5, it doesn't mean anything else.
It was discarded as quickly as all the money that D.B. Cooper got for a ransom or whatever. So that was pretty funny. Just, you know, the money just kind of like just gets left behind. Nobody cares.
Oh, what was funny was like I'm watching the scene and he's talking to the it was obviously decades ago. I can still refer to him as a stewardess, not a flight attendant. And it didn't click with me. I'll confess, it didn't click with me when he said he has a bomb. It didn't hit me what was happening. But when I saw the money, I went, "Oh my God, it's D.B. Cooper!" It took me a little longer to get what they were doing, and I went, "No, D.B., why are they doing D.B. Cooper? I don't understand." And then it was like some bet of his with Thor or whatever it was. I don't know. Oh, no, brothers. So, anyway, back to the episode. Clearly, eventually, we all know it's going to happen. Loki escapes because, as Mobius himself points out, that's what Loki does. He escapes. And how much fun is that gadget he gets a hold of? I thought that was I think that's an ingenious way of using editing. It's just really kind of fun. And there's that scene, even though I'm skipping something I wanted to talk about, and I'll bounce back to it. But when he screws around with Hunter B-15, he keeps flipping it back and forth. It's such an oddly satisfying moment in the episode. And that's what I realized one of the genius things about, the idea of basing the show about Loki and what they've done in this episode. They're making me root for Loki. Which is something, generally speaking, we're not used to, but in a way we always kind of do anyway, because he's such a fun, you know, bad guy, I put in air quotes, you know, very well.
Yeah, because this isn't like a Loki that's like had like redemption or anything. I mean, Loki's just been a bastard after this point before he left the timeline. So yeah, it's definitely a neat trick to try to like, you know, like the character while recognizing like he hasn't done like good stuff or like sacrificed himself yet. So it's interesting.
Right. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And that's why they should get absolute credit for what they did when they were doing Endgame, because they had to at least have planned this out to a certain extent. And the fact that he's going to be going through all this before he's had his more redemptive moments that we saw in some of those post 2012 movies, like Ragnarok and like Infinity War and so on.
Yeah, I wonder if they planned this out, you know, back when they like killed him at the beginning of Infinity War. I wonder if like this is like, you know, I suppose maybe they were thinking about doing it, but
I want to give them credit and say that they probably did have it planned out up to a point. I don't know if they had it planned out all the way to a series. That would be, if I learned that, I would be very impressed and very shocked by that. But I do think they probably had something in mind with this character. I don't think when they killed Loki, they thought, Oh yeah, he's done. I think.
Oh yeah. They're smart enough to do that, if they're smart enough to have done that, and like they actually did that, and it's in writing, like give them the fucking Dark Tower or the Talisman or something, because like maybe they could actually pull it off without sucking.
Oh, the Talisman. Oh.
That would just be the best. I mean, it'd be awesome for everybody. You know, kids could go watch it and be fucking awesome. Adults could watch it and be awesome. It's just like, you know, give me $1 billion. There you go. It's going
to
be awesome.
You know me. I have wanted The Talisman to be made into a movie since I read it the first time. You know, when I remember grabbing that hardcover, you know, whatever, and that's one of my all time favorite King. I know it's King and Straw, but you know, I'm just going to say King just for.
And nobody's really done anything that comparable to it. You know, I mean, there's been things that use some elements of it, but there's not been anything that's like just used that concept. So it, you know, if it came out, it'd feel pretty fresh. You know, just a different concept.
Absolutely. I mean, what's great is it in a weird way. It's such an amalgam of so many different horror and fantasy elements. So you can actually, when you see later things, you can see, oh, I see they got that idea from The Talisman. Like Stranger Things, for example, and they refer to the upside down or whatever, the other, which kind of feels like when in The Talisman when he would flip and go to the other world and, you know, how that would be different and go back and forth, which always had a kind of a Narnia quality to it to begin with. I couldn't get through the sequel to it, but the original Talisman, and the fact that many years ago, Spielberg was supposedly going to do it. And I was like, oh my God, please, please. And then you go and do War Horse instead. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, see the art of podcasting is we bring it all together. And I was just about to say, because we mentioned Infinity War, speaking of Infinity or Infinity Stones, how cool was that Infinity Stones revelation? And that's what I think, that's the first thing that really hits him. This isn't just some mere illusion. These aren't some peons. This is actually something that's beyond him.
Yeah, and it just kind of, you know, well, yeah, just it humbles them, you know, and for like an arrogant character or whatever to like, for them to get humbled, it's like really the only way to like, for them to like actually grow as a character. I mean, like they really have to get knocked down a peg, and like having these like incredible, like super powerful objects just be like, yeah, we don't give a fuck. These are paperweights and shit.
And the fact, because you know, it's because you're dealing with things with timelines, that there's and multiverses, there's multiple sets of them.
and these random bureaucrats, I mean, they just, you know, they're just like, you know, bureaucrats, and they just don't give a crap about this stuff, you know. And it's not done in like, I mean, you know, it's they're making a clear point there, but once again, it's just kind of like it's being handled well, because I mean, they just, you know, it doesn't mean anything to these TVA agents. And I mean, but they don't really like, you know, you know what I'm trying to say.
I know exactly what you're trying to say. And it shows itself throughout the episode. I mean, the fact that no one up until this point, other than maybe Mobius himself, and that's only, you know, out of respect, I guess, no one's taking Loki seriously. And he's like, you know, dude, this isn't what he says. He keeps talking about being a god, but I'm like, I'm one of the biggest supervillains of all time. I brought Thor to his knees. I took on the Avengers, you know, until Hulk beat the crap out of me, whatever. And you're treating me like this. You know, it doesn't seem right, but it seeing those stones, and because I wasn't expecting that. And it's like, and I remember thinking, that's really smart. It's such a smart touch there. And because we remember how consumed he was with the Tesseract and the Cosmic Cube, which is basically, you know, encasing, you know, just one of the stones. And then he realizes this is a toy here. This doesn't mean anything here, which I love that. I really enjoy that. And then, you know, and as you said, it's what humbles him, and that's what leads him back to, the room where he was with Mobius earlier, and after he deals with, Hunter B-15 is when he sits down and he puts the file video back on. And not only does he rewatch his own mother's death, and, you know, either she, you know, she's not really his mother, but you know what I mean? She's considered his mother still. Because he bears responsibility for that. And we see him actually being emotionally affected, and he, you know, he's crying at it. And then he sees his own dad, and once I realized where they were going, I was like, oh my God, I know where they're going to go. I know where they have to be going with this.
And yeah, Yeah. Yeah, it's the he's gonna put on a bulletproof vest so the Libyans don't kill him. So
very good. So, you know, after that, and after you know, seeing his own death, whatever, we eventually when he is talking with Mobius again, we get the reveal, which I would assume at least some. I'm not gonna say the majority. I have no idea. I'm gonna guess at least some people in the audience guessed already, but it still works. That the mission that Mobius wants Loki to help them with, the fugitive variant that they're trying to hunt down, who's been killing their people throughout time, apparently, and including we see at the end in 1858, Salina, Oklahoma, which by the way is also a year before oil was famously discovered there. So that's kind of interesting. They even make a point of, you know, touching the oil, saying there's oil here or something. Anyway, point is, the fugitive variant is Loki. Now, they say that, and in a way, it feels like, oh, okay, then he must be. But you know, they never cinch it, because they never show us the face of the guy at the end.
Yeah, I think they would show, like, you know, a maniacal grin if it was actually Loki there. So
I was thinking, if you're not showing me that that's Loki, then I don't yet. I'm inclined to think that it's not. I think they believe it's Loki, but it's not. So there is something else going on here. And the one thing that occurred to me, and I thought was curious, once because I was waiting for that reveal, I was waiting to see him, and when they didn't give it to me, I was like, "Oh well, now I don't think it's Loki because he didn't show me his face." Those TVA agents who show up there before they get burned and wiped out, I think one of them makes a point of saying that the person that they're tracking had used an actual time machine. So that made me very curious. Because the way they're getting in and around, then we assume, or just through these different little portals and whatever. But someone used a physical time machine to go where they've been going. So they're not using the same means of, you know, time transport that the TVA has, that we've seen them using. So that makes me very curious. And, you know, it started the wheels turning. I mean, you're like, a time machine? I don't know. No. It made me wish I knew more about Marvel Comics to think, wait, have there been characters who have used time machines? I mean, did Kang use a time machine? I have no idea. You know,
Well, Kang just has, like, good technology, but, like, notably in Marvel, in like, especially for, like, the first, you know, couple decades or so, there wasn't a lot of, like time travel abilities bouncing around there. However, during that time period, I mean, Doctor Doom had a time machine that people were using all the time. So there's a hooded bad guy that has his own time machine that go back to over and over and over again. And it was just a thing, you know, that they used it. You know, at least a dozen times. I mean, just Doom had his own time machine. I remember it kind of had like a square kind of like outline thing, like when people like would travel through it and stuff. So
I you know what I do know, I well, now that you mentioned that, I do actually remember that, because I have, although not as many issues probably as you, I'm sure, but at least I did read a lot of Fantastic Fours from like the 60s and 70s into the very early 80s before I stopped shortly within a year or two of John Byrne taking over the title, I think, or something.
And they just kind of used it like a lot. Like, I think that's what, like, I think Captain America like used it once to like go back and like consider like saving Bucky once and stuff, like, you know, like way back in the day. Like, it just kind of like was the thing that people used for a while.
It's like Rip Hunter's time bubble or something. I'll tell you, if they really want to be cute, they should never reveal who it is throughout this series, because there's no way that I just look. I much like Reed Richards on WandaVision, I can't imagine they'll reveal Doctor Doom on Loki. But if they never reveal that it's him, then you can get away with it.
Yeah.
Oh, I just love that idea so much. So
might be connected to, you know, whatever's going on back in like 16th century France or whatever too. I mean, like, there is, like, you know, they're definitely drawing attention to some demonic looking figure like up in the glass and stuff, and Doom, and like, you know, like Doom's kind of thing was like, wasn't it his mom's spirit was stuck in hell or something, and he was trying to like get Mephisto to like let her out or something like that. I think that was kind of like his thing, and like that's how he got injured, like his face got burned, I think, was something like that. So
right.
You know, Doom's been connected with like, you know, demons and magic stuff and whatever, you know, like, forever.
Right, because the kid mentions, you know, points to the stained glass thing, and we see the horns, and so I think some people thought about like Loki's normal helmet has like horns like that. Although, where did he get it again? Where did he find it? Did he find it in a storm closet somewhere? I also thought of the possibility. Once I had the thought, oh, maybe it's not Loki at all because they didn't reveal it. I started rewinding back to our conversations during WandaVision, and knowing that this was supposed to follow WandaVision, it's like, oh, maybe one of those demonic, spectrally kind of characters we thought were going to show up in WandaVision turns out we got faked out, and they're actually going to be showing up on this instead. Well, like Mephisto, for example. Although this, I think he would be doing something a bit more bigger than this, but who knows?
Right.
Oh. So that was really, you know, actually that's the end of the episode. One other thing I just want to clear up with you, because I had heard this before. I actually think I heard someone mention this before I even watched the episode, so I was keeping my eyes open for it. I've heard someone or some people even mention that they thought the seeds were also being planted here for Secret Wars. I personally didn't see that. But that might just mean that I just missed it. I mean, I'm also not a big Secret Wars fan guy, whatever. Did you get that impression at all from this episode?
No, that doesn't really, right?
Okay. No, I didn't think so.
Yeah, because that, like, you know, that's none of this stuff really applies to that. That was just, like, you know, a powerful alien just, like, making everybody fight each other, so.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, and I mentioned this when we were talking, I think this was a conversation I had during the WandaVision podcast. Look, whether it's Marvel or DC or even any other comic book company, I think we've seen over the last whatever number of years, 10, 20, 50, whatever number of years you want to go back to, that whoever the publisher is and whoever the creators are, they will use various comic book storylines as, you know, inspiration, and they will adapt certain elements, but they rarely, if ever, do any straight up adaptations. Everything you can think of, like, well, it's got the Infinity War and Endgame. There are elements from Infinity Gauntlet in there, but it's certainly not Infinity Gauntlet, you know, and so on and so forth. The upcoming Batman movie sounds like it's an amalgam of a couple different famous Batman storylines, from The Long Halloween to Death in the Family, and not Death in the Family. A couple of, it's not relevant. The upcoming Flashpoint, and everything I've heard about it, it looks like it's going to be, and that's DC dealing with their own multiverse, because they're just as famous, if not more so, for having a multiverse. But does it sound like they're really going to be following the Flashpoint storyline from the comics and even that animated film? I don't think so. It would be amazing if they did, but I'm betting they're not, just based on what we do know. And, or like WandaVision, they just basically took ideas from, like, from multiple different things. It was we're going to take a little bit of this and a little bit of that, a little bit of the House of M here or whatever it was, or a little bit of, oh, they're in the suburbs now from this storyline, and oh, here her kids from that storyline, and just kind of mash it all together. So it could be something that maybe they're taking some sort of idea or ideas from it, but I didn't see that. It is on there. When you look at their big docket of upcoming projects, I believe Secret Wars is supposed to be something that they're leading up to at some point. I don't know if that's a rumor, I feel like that's been confirmed. I don't know. Like I said, I was never a big Secret Wars fan. I do have a faint memory of it. I think it's an important comic book in terms of it being one of the first, if not maybe the first big crossover event that a comic book publisher ever did.
It was Secret Wars was like a mini series. So like, I mean, it, you know, it was just like a 12-issue mini series and like different characters. I mean, some of the other comics showed like those characters like disappearing and stuff for the most part, but it wasn't just like a giant thing for the most part. It was just kind of like a big, you know, year-long event that just played out in 12 issues.
Well, yeah. But in a sense, that's kind of like what I mean, not they're not similar in terms of events, but Crisis DC, which was basically a year later, is a 12-part series. And then, but all the different comics would have a little bit of a crisis tie-in, but they weren't, you didn't need to read any of the other comics. You just needed to read those 12. And I think that's kind of sort of what they did with Secret Wars. The other thing with Secret Wars is, I mean, without being too, you know, too much of a savant about it, I know that Secret Wars was like, okay, this is something we're doing to push toys or to get a toy line or something like that. It was something along those lines. So it has a certain kind of, to me at least personally, there's a certain cheesy factor that I kind of downgraded in my mind. You know, like, oh, you know, I think they were trying to get another toy license, and this is their way of trying to put themselves on the map or something, maybe. Maybe like He-Man or something. I don't know. Which would be funny if it was He-Man, because He-Man ended up being part of DC for a little while, because they were doing like He-Man comic previews and DC issues. Anyway, who cares? So, okay, we can agree. We don't see that. And I kind of cheapens it. So I hope not. So that was basically it. I mean, we've talked about TV shows over the years, and whether it be a limited series or not, and we talk about an episode being a lot of setup. This might be the most classic setup episode you can get. I mean, it's mostly setting up an exposition. I mean, but it's done in such an entertaining way, I didn't care. I enjoyed it. I didn't care that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a balanced episode in terms of, you know, stories, like, because, you know, we could have done a recap. I could have done the recap in like two sentences and with a whole lot of exposition in it, but I didn't want to do it that way. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was well shot and I thought it was pretty cool looking. I liked, like, did you notice how the, like the TVA city, like it just kind of looked like it was a matte painting. When, I mean, of course, it was CGI, but it definitely didn't like look like traditional CGI. It just looked like a fucking matte painting.
Yes, I thought
that was pretty. It's a really cool. And I guess if, you know, this whole thing's got like a '60s vibe, it makes sense to do that. But like the fact that they did that instead of just like the cheesy, really fake looking like green screen crap, I really appreciate that. Oh. The you know, whoever's doing the design on it is fucking good. So.
Oh yeah, I'd rather it be done in that style than say looking at it the city from like, you know, Star Wars: The Phantom Menace or something, one of those movies where. Which, and again, I don't mean to knock them, you know, per se for that, but it just this. It added a little bit of texture or flavor to the proceedings. Because I remember having that same thought. It's like, wow, they've taken the kind of the retro feel even to the exteriors. Oh, I feel like I'm going to sneeze. Oh,
bless you.
Oh, I think I'm held in. Oh, boy. Hold on. Oh. I think I just threw out my shoulder sneezing. Okay, COVID. Anyway, yeah, so I am definitely looking forward to the next episode and seeing where this is all going. I've actually not read up on anything as far as future episodes of this show, because I don't want to be spoiled other than the trailers that we saw. So I am excited about it. Hey, I haven't even looked to see if is Tom Hiddleston supposed to be showing up in the next Thor movie, which I believe just finished filming. But I don't know if he was part of that or not. So
I don't think so. I don't remember seeing him on the cast list. So
look at you looking at the cast list. Look at you. Yeah. All right. this is a nice start to the season and nice start to hey, podcasting with Dan again, which is always, you know, the best thing we can do here when, you know, when I allow you to talk, of course. And yes. I know Gott will be disappointed, our resident monitor of, he's our time monitor or timekeeper for how long we tend to be on this podcast. But
yeah, so. We'll call him Agent D69. So.
Hey, you know what? I'll take 2 minutes just to comment on another comic book related matter. I am still one of those people who are continuing to make my way through the CW DC shows. Even though I gave up on Batwoman, had nothing to do with the recasting. I didn't really like the first season very much. I couldn't get into the second season. I was just like, you know what? I don't care anymore. Supergirl, glad it's finally ending. It's just needs to end and just got, it's gotten barely tolerable over the last couple of years. Once you get past Luther, The Flash, I wish they could have hired me several years ago to be the head writer for the fucking Flash. There is no excuse for this show not to be better than it is. Whatever.
Yeah. I bailed out all of them a few years ago just because it was like too much to try to consume like all that on a week to week basis.
Yeah.
But the only one I missed watching was Legends of Tomorrow just because they like actually tried to do fun stuff every now and then instead of just like, oh, like, you know, what kind of relationship drama is Barry or Oliver going to have this week? Oh, it's that relationship drama again. Oh, this for an entire season again.
I'm still watching Legends of Tomorrow. I don't hate it, but I kind of wish they had made a decision because they've pretty much overhauled the cast over the last few seasons, which I don't mind. I kind of wish they took it further. I kind of wish they would overhaul the cast again. Because there's just not enough characters that I'm really into that are part of the quote unquote legends themselves. They're just, I love that they got Constantine, even though they're kind of, I don't buy some of what they've been doing with his character, but I'm letting it go because I like seeing Matt Ryan on the show or whatever. But it just, and because obviously the show doesn't have the greatest of budgets, so I do kind of cringe a little bit when they deal with, you know, a season long storyline. Like this one's going to keep having aliens in it. So we get all these, you know, really cheesily CGI'd aliens showing up over and over. I'd rather it just be people in outfits, quite frankly, than the CGI, which never looks like it's actually there. What I'm bringing up, what I'm getting to, Superman and Lois is really, really good. It's shockingly good. I just watched the last two episodes in the last couple days, and it's the first CW, DC, whatever you want to call it, show that actually made me get teary during an episode. Never happened in any other ones. I know people were kind of, and I was one of them, who were kind of like, oh, this guy is Superman, really? And she's, this nobody is Lois? Come on, really? She's very good. He's better than I thought he would be. The storyline, the stuff with the kids, the stuff they've done with John Henry Irons, which was kind of a legitimate surprise. It's just, I am very surprised by how good the show is. I do give it a very, very solid recommendation. As, you know, I'd almost want to get rid of all the other shows and just keep this one. Except for Stargirl's coming back, and I love Stargirl, so hopefully that will still continue to be good. But I just want to say that for Superman and Lois, it is very good. I would recommend it to people. Watch it from the start. You'll be pleasantly surprised by how good it is. Trust me.
Sweet.
All right. So, with all that said, if y'all out there, if you enjoyed this podcast, guess what? You'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Like the page, and you can join the conversation about shows such as Loki or pretty much anything else TV or film related. We don't mind. And if you say anything we don't like, it, we'll just delete you. Don't worry about it. You can find us, good Lord. You can find us on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. Apparently, you can find us on Overcast. I've learned that a lot of people download us on something called Overcast, which is interesting. And now you can... You were saying
Overcast was what I wanted to call the Frasier podcast.
I know. I think that would have been an issue because if it turns out we've been on Overcast all along, people would have gotten confused. And as of now, we are now also on Spotify and Amazon Music. Yes, it only took us over 7 years to finally join everybody else on Spotify. So basically, we're pretty much everywhere you can find podcasts at this point. Except for Pandora or that, I don't think we're on that Google one. I'm not sure, but you know, look, I can only do so much anyway. But if you want to find all 313 of our podcasts at this point, you can find them at stvdpodcast.podbean.com. And finally, my shoulder really hurts. You can also follow us on Twitter. No, I've been having problems with the shoulder since last Friday, and it was finally getting better over the last 24 hours. And that sneeze, I think, hurt my shoulder. I can't believe I did that. First of all, and also very unprofessional. I actually sneezed on the podcast. I didn't hit mute. I didn't hit the button. I just whatever.
Yeah, at least we got to hear it happen, so now we don't have to wonder if you hurt your shoulder, like brushing your teeth or, like, you know, bathing.
I think I did that once. Anyway, you can also follow us on Twitter, and maybe I might, like, I have to talk to Jamie. She actually offered to manage or co-manage that Twitter account, because we should really be driving to. I've never bothered trying to get followers on that account, and it occurred to me we might be taking a bit more seriously if we had more followers on Twitter.
Yeah, well, just so you know, she can't fucking spell, so if you don't mind that, go for it.
I'll say she's only allowed to post pictures, not use words. Anyway, all right, that is it for this week. Again, we will be back next week for the next episode of Loki. And finally, thanks for rejoining the podcast, Dan. It's always good to hear your voice here.
Yes, thank you for allowing me to come back after I sent you money using the Cash App to allow me to be back on the podcast.
Well, you know, I'm all about that cryptocurrency because, you know, I thought it was kryptonite. You know, anyway, oh, awful, awful. I hate myself for that. All I can say after that is just good night, everybody.
Yes, that was a real dog of a joke. Good night.